Joining us in the studio, Llewellyn King. Let's get a little early start on this. We got some time to spend with the King. And if you Google the King, you get Llewellyn. Llewellyn King, executive producer and host, White House Chronicle on PBS. Author of The King File, a contributor to Huffington Post, is, of course, this show. And he is tweeting at Llewellyn King 2. That is Llewellyn King and the numeral 2. Llewellyn King, welcome.
Thanks. Good morning, Tim. Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
I was looking at, before I get to the story, I wanted to ask you about any reflections you might have on John McCain. I mean, you've covered White House, Washington and the White House for a long, long time. I mean, you've seen him come and go. Watching him come and go.
I knew him quite well over quite a long time. When I was publishing a publication called Defense Week, he gave a speech for me, and that's how I met him when he first came to Washington. We remained in contact. I saw him from time to time. The last thing I did with him was a television interview a couple of years ago about Chinese incursions in the South China Sea. He was always civil, courteous, often funny, a delight to deal with, no pomposity, no self-importance, and always something to say that wasn't political, that had a true bearing on the issues. I was a fan. I also used to see him from time to time at the Churchill Society. He was an authority on Winston Churchill, and once he gave a very good and, I thought, extremely interesting speech on Churchill.
It's fascinating to watch because his career spanned several cycles of politics in this country, and you've seen them, and his valedictory speech, his farewell speech, if you will, on the floor of the Senate was, we're getting nothing done, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting nothing done in the Senate. It seemed like a cry for some sort of a return to what used to be, although I don't know that that's ever going to happen.
I think he had a great sense of the importance and the dignity of the Senate and was deeply distressed when he saw it failing in its duty to the public. And I think he felt those things. I think he felt that public service was a very high calling and deserved your finest attention and your best efforts. And if he saw his colleagues not doing that, he was distressed, and he reflected that in what he said. I think his study of English political history contributed to his sense that, which Churchill had very much had, that the duty of an elected official is enormously important, and it is to do the job, not to keep the job.
Llewellyn King, Llewellyn, I was reading a story and I was thinking of you because I know we were going to talk about, power, energy, environmental, an Ohio-based energy company closing its last coal-fired power plant in Ohio and Pennsylvania. First Energy Solutions saying it plans to shut down its remaining four coal plants by 2022. The company says it can't compete in the regional wholesale markets that are managed by PJM Interconnection. And it does seem that coal is falling more and more into disfavor. But the reason I bring it up in part is because you have been writing about environmentalists, and you go back to the 70s and 80s when nuclear was poo-pooed. And, you see some of the same mistakes playing out. This is, again, an interesting evolution of thought on providing energy for our country. So talk a little bit about that.
We're talking here about electrical energy, which is hugely important, as you know, and which will become even more so as we electrify transportation. There is a tendency to look for the panacea, the one single factor that will solve a problem, and it's never so. At the moment, and this is the article that you're quoting, the moment I'm concerned with the environmental movement, and many of these people are my friends, I've covered them for years, I've known them well, are tremendously in love, intoxicated with the idea of what they call renewables, which are boiled down to being solar power and wind power. If you go overboard on these, you do some things that really are quite foolish, one of which is, of course, you don't know the full effect of wind power on avian life, bird life. We know that a lot of bats and a lot of birds get killed by windmills. They try to sight them in areas where there's no large bird populations or not in migratory paths. I don't know how successful that is. It's a tremendous slaughter of birds, nonetheless. But the real thing is we don't know what the life of these are. We know that in the North Sea, where the European countries, particularly Britain and Norway, have gone crazy for windmills, They've had a lot of problems with them, just in their durability and surviving in the hostile environment in the ocean, dealing with the climate there, the wind. Too much wind isn't good for a windmill, which is rather an ironic situation. Likewise with solar, these are good tools. These are things we can use, but if we overdo them, we're going to end up with something that is a disaster rather than an asset. Solar works very well, and I absolutely applaud the idea of putting solar on every roof you can see, but not taking good farmland or thousands of acres, as has been proposed, of the southwest deserts just to make electricity. Now, windmills are an eyesore if you have a lot of them. 1,000 windmills is a pretty hideous thing to look at. A few, and where I live in Rhode Island, we have some, they're rather attractive. A few windmills work well, too many windmills, not a good idea. Then we don't know the true design life of these structures.
If you're a windmill stockholder, I mean, you probably think that it looks kind of pretty.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. I didn't know you were invested in wind power.
I'm not invested. I know what you're saying, though, and you know, I think the biggest point that you make here to me that's the most important is not just about that, which is important. You know, one on a Kmart or in a Walmart is one thing. Thousands and thousands across the desert, not great. But here's the thing. You note that the second law of thermodynamics, you can't get more electric energy out of a square meter of a solar cell than sunlight falls on it. Likewise with wind, no more energy can be extracted from the wind than it contains. More research won't change that. So in other words, the effect of this is not that these are not going to be made much more efficient than they are right now, that there's not much more you can generate. And the needs of this country in terms of electricity are so great, and they're increasing all the time, you have to look at something other than just those renewables.
You said it very well. That's quite correct. We can get little tweak them. I mean, an enormous improvement was adding rare earths to the turbines, which are rare earths, most of which come from China, by the way, 97% of them, are a tremendous multiplier in generators. They put up the amount of power. We use them in all sorts of things. That's a separate story. My other concern is, what happens after the design life, 30 years, 40 maybe, when all of these windmills have to be dismantled, all of these solar cells have to be dumped somewhere? That is an environmental challenge we haven't thought about yet.
Well, to that point, we have that same issue with nuclear, right? You have to decommission plants.
We have that issue with pretty well everything. I mean, coal mines are not necessarily over when you stop using them. There are fires in coal mines that have burned for decades. There are water issues with coal mines, there's seepage. Everything you do tends to have a legacy. We've not looked at the legacy on wind and solar. We have looked at it on nuclear. I don't think we've handled it well. I don't think we've done a very good job in either informing the public or advancing the science as fast as it should be advanced. But the difference between these different sources is coal is a fairly high output energy source. It has a fair amount of energy density. Nuclear has huge energy density. If you think the average wind turbine you look at today, the new ones are about 2 megawatts, the old ones about 1 megawatt. A nuclear power plant is 1,600 megawatts, and there are usually two of them. I think actually the cap was 1,380, but I think now it's allowed to go higher. That is a tremendous amount of power. That is a lot of energy, and the design life is, the actual life has been creeping up to about 80 years. So you get a tremendous amount of power from a very relatively small installation compared with the diverse power you get from solar and wind, which takes much larger installations, many, many, many more things. Both are important. We're going to need them. Global warming, in my view, and increasingly in almost 100% of scientific opinion, is here, and it's getting worse quite fast. We need to act, and these are good sources of energy. What I'm saying, though, is do not exclude one because you've fallen in love with the other or because it has the dangerous idea about it that it's a free lunch because the wind blows and the sun shines.
Llewellyn King has written, Are the Environmentalists Making Another Mistake? Llewellyn King, executive producer and host of White House Chronicle, joining us on POTUS. Llewellyn, what about the other side of the equation? You know, you've got the production of power, but there's also the consumption side. In other words, We need more efficient, well, automobiles, for one, but more efficient ways in which the power is being used, whether it means...
It's coming very fast. I'm so glad you've raised that. That's very important. It's coming quite fast. Smart meters, smart cities, the use of power, and power in the post-war years, with the demand for electricity was growing at 7.5% a year, doubling.
And by the way, it makes it cheaper for people, too, products are more efficient.
We haven't seen any rise in the consumption of electricity in several years. It's flat to dwindling. Efficiency is kicking in everywhere. This is a problem for some of the utilities because, capitalist system is built on growth, but we are conserving more and more electricity, and we need to continue to do it. We're probably going to see a big step up in conservation with the so-called Smart Cities Program, which is partially using new technologies like blockchain and artificial intelligence to manage our cities, to manage our electric consumption, to manage almost everything in a city. It's very exciting. It's a new era, and conservation is at the heart of it. The product will be much less use of power and much, much more efficient use of power. And likewise, you look at your automobile, it uses less gasoline and goes better than they ever have. We are making progress, and it's really quite dramatic if you look back. We also find sometimes new sources of energy that we didn't expect. In the energy crisis in the 1970s, the government said, don't talk about natural gas. It's a depleted resource, gone, finished. The fact is that we've got a new technology, fracking, which is a complex way of breaking down gas and oil deposits in the earth in small ones. And we have an abundance of gas now, which is also changing this electric equation. But gas, though much better to burn than coal because it has half the greenhouse gas associated with it, is still a carbon producer. It is not perfect, which is why we look to solar, to wind, and in my case, I think especially globally, we're going to have to look to nuclear. And I hope nuclear science eradicates some of the things that have been problems heretofore.
As we get ready to wrap up, I got two tweets for you. One from AB, who says more research needs to be done on thorium molten salt reactors, something I've never even heard of. And one other, I would like your reaction to this tweet that came in from Deborah. I could listen to Llewellyn King read a phone book. I never pay more attention to your show than when he is on.
Well, that's very nice. Would you send that over to the accounting department, please? Yes, thorium reactors. Thorium is a fertile but not fissile material. Does that confuse you? The thing is, reactors can be made in many ways. If you build an automobile, you better have four wheels. You can have three, it doesn't work so well. Four wheels, you know this. But if you start to build reactors, you can build them in 100 ways. And molten salt and thorium are one of the ways. I happen to think it's probably quite a good way. But whether we're going to see it developed, I don't know. Thorium is abundant, and incidentally, I mentioned rare earths earlier. It's found in abundance where rare earths are mined. Thorium has been around. The Oak Ridge National Laboratory did a lot of work on thorium back in the 60s, and many people believe it is what we should be doing. You've got to make decisions, though. Decisions in nuclear are hard. We use the so-called light water technology, which was the technology favored by Admiral Rickover for the nuclear navy and then eventually for civilian nuclear power. It may not have been the perfect choice, but it was a choice. There are often situations rather like which kind of tape do we use? Should we have used VHS or should we have used Sony? Everybody in the trade says Sony is better, but we use VHS. You've got to make decisions. Thorium so far has not been decided upon, but it is very intriguing.
And not to be confused with the Illudium Q36 space modulator either. So, Llewellyn, thank you as always for joining us, and thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks as always for having me here. I love it.
Yes, sir.
Cheers.
Llewellyn King, executive producer, host, White House Chronicle on PBS, and master reader of the phone book. We didn't get a chance to do that, but maybe next time. And he is tweeting at Llewellyn King 2. That is at Llewellyn King and the numeral 2.